Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. Wealth Advisor and Director at Ellenbecker Investment Group. Ellenbecker Investment Group is located in Waukesha, just north of I-94, between Highway 164 and Highway F in Ridgeview Corporate Park, and in the village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank Building, across from Winkies. We also serve clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. Visit ellenbecker.com for more details. My guest today is Melissa Whitaker, CEO and founder of Melissa Whitaker International. Thank you so much for joining us today, Melissa.
Thanks for having me on.
You have quite the impressive resume with the time that you've spent in the corporate world. I'm really excited to be talking today about our topic, which is becoming unstoppable. The book that you co-authored called Pushing to the Front talks a lot about that becoming unstoppable. But what does that really mean to you, and how did you get started in this industry?
Yes, great question. So, you know, as you mentioned, I did, of course, start in more of the corporate America environment when I first started working, you know, my early 20s. And I got great experience working for small, medium, and large size organizations in sales, sales leadership, and management, and also then developing my own training and development curriculum and divisions that I ran. So it was one of those things where when I found myself married, having a two-year-old toddler, and having a baby on the way, I just got to the place where I was like, okay, it's pivotal time. What am I going to do? Because I was working, you know, 12 to 16-hour days, 5 days a week, away from the home. And my husband said, maybe it's time for you to start your own business. And you can imagine, like, as exciting as that sounded, I was like terrified at the same time, because at the time I was the breadwinner of our family, and I thought, okay, we have a mortgage to pay. I'm sure people can relate to that from the financial pressures of a household. And so my husband was, you know, he was so supportive though. And he just said, look, you have spent years making all these other organizations a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's time for you to do that for our family, but that way we can have the flexibility that even though you may be working a lot and you love what you do, and we can make a good amount of resources, let's say, but we can do it on our schedule and our timing so that you can also be hopefully a little bit more present mom and the best wife you can be. And he's like, I believe in you. And I thought, well, I'm glad you believe in me, because I was like, the daunting thought of like, okay, starting that from scratch. I was like, hon, do you realize that some companies, it takes them like 5 years to be profitable, coming from my business background? And he's like, well, I know you're going to ramp up quick. I just know this the way you are. And so honestly, as we get started in our conversation today, I just think it's so important for the listeners to know that my journey, which many people can, you know, navigate that, whether in the corporate world or where they start their own company as an entrepreneur, I do believe that it's like if you have a passion and you have a calling and you feel that it's something that you can be unstoppable in, I just encourage people to go for it. And so back then, my journey started honestly with hope and prayer and a lot of faith. And so I just encourage people, whether that's something for them or not, that's up to them. For me, my faith is very important. And so I just remember that my prayer back then, and still is today, is I just said, you know what, Lord, if you keep opening up doors and contracts for this new business venture, which was 14 and a half years ago, started 14 and a half years ago, I will do everything you've given me the ability to do. But if you keep opening up doors and contracts, I'll know that you're honoring this so that I can honor my family. And that was my prayer back then. It still is today. And for all the listeners out there, I just want to make sure everyone understands, even from that financial standpoint, that money sense standpoint, that navigating maybe even entrepreneurship side, there are highs and lows that we're going to talk about today when someone runs their own company. And I don't want anyone to ever think it's gravy or it's an overnight success. It's definitely not that. But if you have a purpose and a calling, it is worth it to go after it, because that means that you're there to serve certain people. And if it's not you, then who? You know, and so I just think that's really important that we kind of bring that up today on why I started my company. And as we get into the details today about like what we do as a company and an organization, and what led me to kind of co-author one of my books called Pushing to the Front with Brian Tracy, how that navigated through and what we really want to do to serve others.
Absolutely. So you had a purpose and you had a calling. And it sounds like you had some wonderful support from your family, from your husband being willing to let you step out into the unknown and take this big chance. What was your process for setting goals?
So it's a great question. So one of the questions that I get a lot, especially when I started my own company, and kind of what led me to co-author this book with Brian Tracy back in 2011, is at the time I was thinking, like, what do I want to share? Because the question I got most often was, Melissa, how did you move up your career so quickly? Because even before I started my company, I had these pivotal moments in my life where I was doing things way far advanced in my career from title or status or whatever than most people were around me. So like I started in sales in my early 20s, and then by the age of 25, I was a sales manager at a technology organization that had 9 offices across, you know, the state of Illinois at the time. And most people said to me, whoa, hold on, you're 25, you're female, which, to be honest, I was in a male-dominated industry at that time.
Still I can relate to that.
Still is a little bit today. I'm sure you can relate to that. And I just had these big dreams. And so I wanted to climb this corporate ladder. And I knew that I just could go after anything I wanted to and anything was possible. So I went after it. And so people thought I was crazy, of course. And then they thought, when I did become a manager, at the time, my boss, who was my manager, who then got promoted, of course, to like regional manager, had said, okay, Melissa, you know, how do you want to do this? Because they weren't at the size where they had their own training and development department inside at the time, even though they were a decent sized organization. But it was one of those things where it was interesting because he said, you have to build a sales team. And I thought, okay, this is going to be interesting. I've never done it before. And there were like 9 male managers. I was the only female. And I was 25. So you can imagine, even in your industry mm-hmm. as well with investments, I will say it was very interesting to me because most of the male managers would not even look at me. They would not even acknowledge me at the meetings because they thought I didn't belong there. I was female and I was 25. And I was like, hey, that's okay. Because, you know, I played soccer my whole life. I went to college on a full soccer scholarship. And when I was younger, I had to prove myself every season to the boy teams I was on because there weren't girl teams. And so business was nothing different to me. I was like, if I have to prove myself, game on. Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
You were used to rising to the challenge.
I was used to it. So I said, okay, this is nothing new. Like, let's show them I am unstoppable. Let's show them that I can do anything and put my mind to it. And if I want it, I'm going to make it happen. And so I really worked really hard that first year in the sales management role where I had to earn the right. You know, I had to earn the right. And so I bring that up, Christina, because that kind of navigated into this trajectory in my career world that brought me to these goals that we're talking about. And people would say, well, how did you get to be a sales manager at 25? And then at 27, I became the vice president of a company. I had left that company and went to a smaller organization, became the vice president at 27. And then I had decided, let me go back and let me, what did I really want to do after that? And end up going back to a larger company and running divisions, you know? And so that took me to this goal setting structure that we're about to talk about.
Wonderful. Well, we're going to take a quick break and we will be back more with Melissa Whitaker when we come back. Welcome back to Money Sense. My name is Christina Schnuckel. I'm a wealth advisor and director here at Ellen Becker Investment Group. My guest today is Melissa Whitaker, CEO and founder of Melissa Whitaker International. Before our short break, Melissa, we were chatting a little bit about how you founded your company and just the long history you have in the corporate world and climbing that corporate ladder and how you embraced challenges. And we're going to talk a little bit about the goal setting. You know, how did you set goals for yourself to be able to achieve so much in such a short period of time?
Yes, thank you. So one of the things that I have at questions that we talked about in the previous segment was, Melissa, people always ask me, how did you achieve so much in such a short time? And I ended up then conveying some of those steps and goal setting measurements, let's say, into a book called Pushing to the Front to help other people to create unbelievable results in a really short time. So I focused on what's called 11 key steps to create extraordinary results. And just for our quick time today, I'm going to go over some of those steps briefly, but I'll focus on one big one I think that the listeners will really want to focus in on to make a big difference for them. So most people have heard of, by the way, SMART goals. I did not make that up, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I took that concept of SMART goals, and for those of for people who aren't familiar with that, it stands for specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and a time frame. That's kind of what that stands for. I took those concepts and I said, what else would I add to that? So as I talk about my 11 steps in this book, Pushing to the Front, I talk about number one first is just setting goals. Anyone we know who is the most successful in the world are people who actually set goals and write them down. It's like the 2% mindset out there. I'm sure you've heard that. Mm-hmm. So number one, I tell people set goals. Number two, be specific, as I mentioned. Number three, determine that time frame. Number four, measure progress. Five, make it achievable. Number six, which is added on, which is know your why. Know your why. And I'm going to come back to that in a minute. Okay. All right. And then number seven, we want to put the goals in writing because I've talked to a lot of people, by the way, who say, yeah, Melissa, I've got goals. I set goals. They're right here in my head. And I say, okay, that's a great start. But there is something that transfers, which you've probably seen in your career, that when you have clarity on your goals, but then you physically write them down, that's where the magic starts to happen. You know, it becomes alive. So I would say, write it down. Number eight, have a plan. Number nine, positive attitude matters. Number 10, take action. Obviously, without action, it's just a dream. And number 11, visualize the outcome. And as I mentioned these 11 steps, as I mentioned before, I just want to have a few more steps or information I want to talk about is knowing that why. Because I've had people say, out of all these 11 steps, what's one that you think is extremely vital and pivotal? And I think it's the why. And that's because, again, people set goals, but some people achieve their goals and some people do not achieve their goals, right? Mm-hmm. And what I have found is that years ago, Tony Robbins said something that just shook me to my core, and it never left me. And he said, as human beings, we gravitate towards what brings us pleasure and we avoid what brings us pain, right? Makes sense. So he said the reason why a lot of people don't reach their goals is because they start with a goal, they start working towards the goal, and then there's pain in the process. Mm-hmm. And they focus more on the pain of the process than the pleasure of the outcome, and so they stop. What's the difference? The why.
Yeah.
And so when we do exercises with people in our organization and the companies that we help now in running my own business, we help people increase their revenue and profits. We help them to set clarity on their goals, and then we have a whole kind of exercise we go through. But we make sure they don't leave the exercise without the why. Because if their why is big enough, then they will focus more on the pleasure of the outcome than the pain of the process because they're so determined and their why is so big. They focus on that pleasure at the end over the pain, and then they succeed.
Yeah.
But if their why is not big, as soon as we all know as human beings that we hit a roadblock or we hit a rock somewhere, if it's painful, we stop, right? So we have to have that big why, and I will say that I contribute a lot to my success in my life so far as just having really big whys and then going after with gusto what I feel it needs to be done or I want to see happen, and I just make sure my why is big enough that with any obstacles, even some we'll talk about today, that come in my path, I can tell you we've gotten through the obstacles because the why was so big.
Well, you're speaking my language there with the why. A couple years ago, as a firm, we read that book, Know Your Why. 30 employees, you know, across a very busy firm during the holiday season. But the book was so important to understand what we do for clients, too. So so many times clients come into us on the onset of a new relationship, and they know what the end goal is, retirement. But they don't know how to get there and everything that encompasses meeting that one goal. And understanding where a client's coming from and that why is what puts all the pieces together. It's so important. We also see it on the employee side here of we want to hire employees that are passionate about what we do and that they understand the why.
Yes.
That's absolutely how you deliver the best product.
Absolutely, hands down.
Yeah, I love that. You definitely improved the SMART goals for me by putting that one in there. I love
good.
That.
Oh, good, good, good. So I will say, when we talk about these goals, though, Christina, it's like people will say, okay, Melissa, you did these amazing things of being a sales manager at 25, then you're a VP at 27. Where did that take you from there? And at 35 years old, I did start my own company, as I mentioned before. And I will say that has been really helpful for me just to go back and make sure I'm living what I preach. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, I think we get really comfortable, like, have to reflect back, like, what got us from A to B or A to Z. But then every day, we have to look ourselves in the mirror and say, are we living and doing what we believe and what we're preaching in some cases? And so I just have to always make sure, like, am I living this out? Because now, from our company, we help companies, as I mentioned, increase their revenue and profits. And we do that through through training, coaching, and consulting, and in four major buckets, which is around sales, leadership, culture, and wellness. And so if we're training others to do these types of things, we have to make sure we're living it out as well. And so I think it's really important that people hear that we can't just help others do certain things. We have to make sure we're living what we also are teaching in anything we're doing in our careers, whether it be in financial investing or whether it be in training, coaching, consulting. I just think that's super important.
It's really important. You know, Melissa, you've accomplished so much, but I'm sure that there's been setbacks. You know, you mentioned a little bit earlier that male-dominated field. You were younger than a lot of the individuals you were managing when you first went into that management position. So I'm sure that had some setbacks to it. What have some other setbacks been for you in your career?
Yeah, I think, like I said, it's not all roses, right? I think sometimes people on the social media world we live in today, they see everyone's, like, best reels.
Yes, their
right?
Instagram face.
Their Instagram face. And they're like, how are they so advanced? Or how are they so far ahead in their life? And I'm not there. I want to encourage people, like, first of all, that's not real, right? Everyone's only going to show you typically their best side. But there are setbacks. And I just, like, remind people, I want to be vulnerable and real to let people know that this is what's real. If you're going through it yourself, you're not alone. I think that's the biggest message I tell people, because a lot of times I think people, whenever we're at a place where something's not going well or not going the way we expected it, we feel isolated. And we feel like, are we the only one going through this? And then you feel like a failure. And it's like, I want to come alongside people and say, no, setbacks are normal. And so one key thing that I've been doing is traveling all around the nation this year, part of last year, but mainly this year. On some of my keynote talks that I'm giving, I felt really compelled to create a talk that's called, it's all focused on resilience, innovation, and comebacks. And it's because for my company, you know, I started my organization in 2010. And honestly, Christina, like, the first 5 years, I couldn't have asked better for a better 5 years. Like, we were growing and growing and growing, and we were adding like staff and employees, and we were growing. And then all of a sudden, after like 2015, one of my staff members and I went on a mission trip. And I'm thinking, this is where our heart is. We want to help serve at an orphanage with these little kids. And it was so close to our heart. We didn't want to just give money. We wanted to be hands-on, which I know is near and dear to your guys' heart here. It's just like philanthropy and giving back and everything, which I think is wonderful. So I'm thinking, okay, we're doing good. We're doing above and beyond just our business, but we're giving back. And I think sometimes we have that impression too, like, okay, we're doing these good things, so good things should happen. Not that we should expect it, but we kind of hope, right? Mm-hmm. If we're being honest.
You put that good energy out there. You're hoping it's going to come back to you.
Right. Mm-hmm. And many times it does. But sometimes the unexpected happens. And so I remember coming back in 2015 and just being kind of mortified, because the one thing I was worried about when I started my company was, I said, well, what if something happens and we – we and something that we can't control, and then all of a sudden, like, the business doesn't work or it fails, right? And so we came back, and all of a sudden we had like 2 months in advance of contracts set up that we always had to make sure we had revenue coming in, could make payroll, operational expenses. And all of a sudden, one by one, every client for all those contracts, the first week we came back from our mission trip, called one by one for all different various reasons. Okay, nothing was similar. Mm-hmm. They either had to put their contract on hold, or they had to cancel it. And I panicked.
That's scary as a business owner.
Frightening. Mm-hmm. And I call my right-hand gal and I'm like, oh my gosh, Tammy, we have to pray for some major, big, brand new business. And she was honestly just so smart about it. She was just like, I'm not going to pray for that. And I said, what? She goes, I'm going to pray for clarity on why God cleared your deck. Mm. And that was pivotal to me.
What a change in perspective to say it that way.
Total change of perspective. And so we kind of went down this road where we had to learn to really be very resilient. We had to learn how to innovate, and therefore we could have a comeback. And that's one message I just want to share with everyone is, like, everyone goes through setbacks, but it is worth building that resiliency. It is worth building your character. It is worth juggling more so that you can stretch yourself to handle more stress, so that you can elevate not only who you are, because when you elevate who you are, you can serve people at a higher level. And so I just want to encourage people through that. It's possible.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, I'm so excited to come back with more after this short break. Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Christina Schnuckel, Wealth Advisor at Ellen Becker Investment Group. My guest today is Melissa Whitaker, CEO and founder of Melissa Whitaker International. And we have been chatting so far today just about your amazing career and all the time that you've spent in the corporate world and being unstoppable, I think is the best way to sum it up. That's what we're calling this show today, is being unstoppable. With everything that you've done and your perspective that you've been able to share with us, Melissa. But I want to segment a little bit and talk about Melissa Whitaker International. So your company that you started, what does it do?
Yes, thank you for asking. And so as we talked about earlier in today's session is, you know, again, I was at a pivotal point in my career where I was working 12 to 16 hours a day, 5 days a week, away from the home. And I loved what I did. I loved what I did. But anyone who's ever a working mom has that pull, you know, where you may love what you do, and yet you want to be this great mom, right? And so I was at this place where we had a two-year-old toddler, I had a baby on the way, and I just knew something had to give. And I was the breadwinner of our family, and so I didn't have the option to, let's say, just take a step back and take some time off. I kind of would have liked that a little bit, to be honest with you, when they were just babies. But that's okay. That wasn't kind of in our cards. And my husband was coming up his career at the time and is doing amazing now, but it just took longer than we had expected. And so I started Melissa Whitaker International because as I prayed about it and said, all right, Lord, I'll do everything you've given me the ability to do, but open up doors and contracts and how I can serve others. And it had kind of transitioned at that time from what I was doing in the corporate space, which at that time, I was the director of training, learning, and development, and I was helping multiple sales locations for a sales organization to help the sales teams increase revenue and profits and all that. And we focused on sales, and we focused on a consultative approach, and we focused on leadership. And so it was a natural progression for me to start my own company doing that. And so what's interesting is through my different corporate experience, I had connections all across the U.S., frankly. And so I thought, okay, I can maybe do this, right? So I just started reaching out to people, and the word got out that I had started my own company, and I was very thankful. I mean, people booked us right away and said, I heard you started your own company. Can you train our people? Or we also had another couple that we're friends with, and they were in a different industry than I had come from, but they said, look, we've had our company for 25 years, and since I started my company in 2010, and it was right after that big financial crash, if you probably remember,
yes,
2008 and 2009. And so this couple said, Melissa, we have had a successful business for 25 years just based on relationships. We've never had to teach our people how to proactively sell. You know, they just kind of were order takers. And they said, we have to change that now, because now for the first time ever, we're losing business to competition. Mm-hmm. And so can you come in? And I said, well, first we've got to stop the bleeding. then we have to turn it back around and grow. And that was a wonderful relationship through that. And so over the course of the last 14 and a half years, I can tell you I have been so thankful that I've been able to, for myself and our organization, the people who work for MWI, we've been able to pour into client after client. We've had like over 1,000 clients at this point, where we've been able to help organizations with these main buckets. Now, I will say it started off with mainly sales and management leadership. We just started off with doing classes, but we quickly realized that we couldn't just keep setting a class, filling it, and being stressed out about filling a class, teaching a class, and then stressing out filling a class. And I thought there has to be a better way. So through over time, like many organizations, we adapted. And we found that we offer now programs for people. And so instead of just doing one-time classes, which can be great, but we also find we can't track the ROI on that. And so what we can do is offer 6- and 12-month programs where we do initial training, and now we've evolved to sales, leadership, culture, and wellness over that time. But we offer initial training, but then we offer ongoing coaching so that not only they can realize their largest ROI, we can help them track it. We can not only track the numbers, but we can track behavioral change, which most people do not do, by the way. They don't track the behavioral change.
No, not at all. And I love that you said that you incorporate culture and wellness into that. You know, that's key when talking about how to affect change in an organization.
I love that you brought that up, because I will say we didn't really add that culture piece like as an actual bucket, let's call it, right? Mm-hmm. We kind of wove it in subtly in what we did. But sales and leadership, honestly, was our biggest part of our business for the first 10 years, if you can believe that. And then when COVID happened, as you well know, we started just reaching out to our clients and saying, what else can we help you with? And they said, you know, Melissa, one of the ways that we're different as a training and consulting firm, I will tell you, is that unlike other companies that kind of come in and just do training, we've always taken a holistic model. And what I mean by that is we believe to our core that when you're happier at home, you're happier at work. And when you're happier at work, you're happy at home. And so because we've had that mantra, to be honest with you, we made sure back in 2014 we started weaving in some kinds of assessments, whereas personalized assessments, so people can understand how they're wired, how other people are wired, how to be more effective in their communication, which then naturally bloomed into this bucket called culture. And I agree with you, by the way, we are at a place now in 2024, for the first time I've seen in 14 and a half years, where we take a different approach than we've done in the past. In the past, we would have companies call us and say, let's just look at sales, or let's just look at leadership. And now I say, hold on, let's ask some questions first. I want to understand better your culture, because like you had mentioned, if we don't address the culture first, I feel like it's almost like not a total waste, but I feel like we're coming at it at the wrong angle. Because if they have a toxic environment, we can do all the sales training in the world,
and it's not going to make a difference.
They may have a little bit of extra sales, but nothing transformational, right? And same thing on leadership. We can go over the principles of leadership and how to be better leaders and effective coaches. But if they can't communicate at the core and people don't trust them at the core, well, what is the point? So now we always say, hold on, let's see how your culture is first. And if that is challenging, which most people have some form of their culture challenge that's challenging, let's address that first. And then as we start to help people to be more effective in their communication and their respect and like seeing people and hearing people and seeking to understand people. Okay, now we can take it to the next level. Let's talk about your sales. Let's talk about your leadership. Let's build this synergy that everyone hopes for and can never find. No, it's possible, but you have to take the proper steps. And so we do offer programs around all of those things now. And we are really hoping that we are obviously standing out very different than the people that we even compete with in the marketplace, because we take this holistic model. And that wellness was added from COVID as well. So, you know, you had mentioned wellness. And so, again, COVID, people said, well, can you, since you're more holistic in your model, we all know that if you don't feel good, you can't produce good. And it's like, you know, they know that that was important to me as an athlete. and something as a CEO of my company, it's like they know I've always been very attentive to like, how can I take care of my health? And just, whoa, I was always kind of weaving that in subtly, but they said, can you offer employee wellness? And so that came out of COVID, that would just came up in 2022, I think it was, that based on feedback of listening to clients, which I highly recommend, and I'd love for you to add on to that, like how important is it to listen to your clients?
Yeah.
Because if we ask the questions and actually listen, we can provide more. What do you think about that?
So I think, you know, asking questions is key. You know, we're always saying before we advise, we listen. So oftentimes when clients come into us for a first time, they're not entirely sure what to expect, but they've interviewed other advisors. So they think we're going to immediately ask them, how much money do you have? Is it in IRA accounts? Is it after tax? You know, what are you paying for fees? And that's not what they get from us. So they're very taken aback. They're surprised because we too take that holistic approach. So in our opinion, you know, the financial piece isn't going to matter all that much if all these other things, if they don't have all their other ducks in a row. What's the money for? Do they want to leave a legacy? Are they charitably inclined? Do they have kids that they want to take care of, grandkids, any special needs in the family? You know, all of those things inform their decisions around wealth. And even getting into some of the behavioral finance items that come into play of how we feel about our wealth. You know, you can usually tell right away if clients have a good relationship with their money or if they don't have a good relationship with their money. But without asking questions, it's impossible to make a meaningful difference that's going to last.
Yeah, I love that you said that. And it's interesting because I recently was talking to some other folks and they said, Melissa, sometimes, you know, we talk about creating legacy wealth. And it's not, I know the initial thought for some people, I'm sure they say this to you as well, that when they think of wealth, they just think of only the money, right? But like as you're mentioning, this came up in a conversation recently. They said, well, Melissa, what do you mean by creating legacy wealth? Because we talk about that. And not because we do financial investing like you guys do. Don't profess it. Don't want to do that. Not in that area. But we promote what's called creating legacy wealth. And how we define that is in three different areas. One is about diversification. And what I mean by diversification from a business owner standpoint is like, make sure you have multiple streams of revenue coming in because we can't know how the market's going to navigate, right? So don't put all your eggs in one basket. And I know you guys have that same mantra when it comes to even financial investing, right? And so we say, I always tell people, like, diversify what revenue streams are coming into your company. And also then, therefore, you'll have diversification of income as well. And then we also say the next one is balance, or I heard recently integration, which I love because we have that weird word of balance, right? Is balance possible? And so someone said recently to me, it was so funny. He said, well, what if we change that to integration? Meaning we all have families and children in some cases, or animals or whatnot. And it's like, what does that mean to you to instead of trying to balance it all, what if we just talked about integration? And so I'm like, I love that. It's the same concept, but it's like, how do we prioritize our priorities to make sure that wealth also comes from making sure we are attentive to our family? Because, right, I'm sure you've seen it. Plenty of people can then go after and making sure they're trying to make the most money as possible, but then they lose their whole family in the process.
Absolutely.
It's devastating. So it's like, I feel like we have to make sure, yeah, we have diversification, but then we have to have that integration balance piece of prioritizing people in our family. And then we always talk about the last part is that give model, which you guys have as well, which I love that alignment. And it's all about making sure that part of legacy wealth, in our opinion for MWI, is are we giving back to organizations, whether it be financial and or hands-on? Are we giving back, which is creating that legacy?
Absolutely. I love the idea of legacy wealth and looking at it through that lens. You know, we often tell clients, the most successful retirement is when you retire to something as opposed to retiring from something. And I think that really ties in well with where they can use their gifts and their talents and really what that retirement means to them.
I love that.
Good.
It's good.
Well, we'll take a short break and we'll be back with more from Melissa Whitaker when we get back. Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Christina Schnuckel, Wealth Advisor and Director here at Ellen Becker Investment Group. And my guest today has been Melissa Whitaker, CEO and founder of Melissa Whitaker International. And we've been chatting all day today about becoming unstoppable and really what that means, drawing from Melissa's strong sales background. And now with Melissa Whitaker International, you are helping other companies be in the driver's seat and really help increasing sales, but also improving culture and wellness and all these other areas. Melissa, what's your ideal client? What type of people come to you for help and support?
Yes, great question. So, you know, we have clients who are small organizations, mid-sized organizations, and large. I know sometimes people specialize just in one specific size. But the reason why I say that is because we do have different programs that accommodate the size, right? So if they're smaller organizations, we do offer, you know, webinar type of services where people can kind of tap into that virtually and there's no travel if they want training, coaching, and consulting. For our mid-size and our larger size organizations, you know, they many times will want us to come in person, which is fine. So we always give people kind of like that free consultation, like where are they at, what are they hoping to achieve, and what are they looking for? And so we do help many different organizations of different industries, though. So when people ask that, like, who's your ideal client for industries or sizes, we really do help companies across the gamut. My background is very adverse, but mainly was in the technology field for a long time. And so, of course, our clients mainly came from that space. But since 2016 until now, we've really diversified that just to make sure we can be agile and flexible in the marketplace in case one industry happens to have a challenge, which we've seen. You know, we do help companies, and the biggest thing is that, you know, whether it's a small, mid-size, or large-size organization, we have different resources and programs to accommodate them regardless of their size.
That's wonderful. I think what I'm hearing is that you're not a one-shoe-fits-all type company. You can really be nimble and adapt to what your clients need.
Correct.
Wonderful. What are the ways that people can have your support? You talked about some of the programs and the resources. Can you share just a little bit more about that?
Sure. So again, there's a lot of free resources that we love to share. So I always tell people, like, look, if you're checking us out and you want some support, start with some of our free resources. We have a YouTube channel, you know, that you can look us up under Melissa Whitaker, and we'll come up with a lot of video content that people can start to just check out, see what the information is, implement ideas. So I always tell people, check that out. In addition to that, you know, you can always go to our website, because we do also have right on our homepage, you can fill in your information to receive some of our, again, free newsletters, which also helps with information. And our website is just melissawhitakerintl.com. So that's Melissa, which is M-E-L-I-S-S-A. Whitaker is W-H-I-T-A-K-E-R and then I-N-T-L. So Melissa Whitaker, I-N-T-L.com. And so people can go on there and just fill in our contact form right on there, and they can automatically be receiving amazing information. Now, when people check that out and they're interested and say, we would like to go a little deeper, more in-depth information and faster results, we really encourage them to make sure they're setting up that free consultation call with us as soon as possible, because we can let them know if now is a good time to actually have that deeper conversation or if we would recommend that in the near future. And we do help them to assess that. But we do have programs that are either webinar-based, in-person class-based, and also, of course, we navigate with people globally. So we have clients across the U.S. and in other countries, so we can make sure we have flexibility with how we communicate, how we train, and how we consult.
That's wonderful. I love that you have some free resources available for companies and individuals out there as well. It's so important to get information out there. Well, we're wrapping up on our time today together, Melissa, but before we go, I've got one question for you, and I think I might already know the answer, but you've been so convicted and so passionate in everything that you've really shared today. So what is your why?
Oh, wow. I love it. Put me on the spot. I love it. My why, obviously, number one is my family, right? And so what gets me through the hard times is knowing that I love my family. And family's been super important to me since I can, as far back as I can remember, even before I had my own family, family was critical to me. So I will say that when I have hard days or hard times where I'm like, oh my gosh, sometimes the company's thriving. And frankly, sometimes we're like holding on for dear life. Like, are we going to make it? And those times I just say, my family, number one, is worth it. So my first why, my biggest why, is my family, wanting to provide for them, wanting to be an example, because I have two daughters who are amazing, lovely ladies who are intelligent and bold and confident. And I want to represent to them that a woman can have a voice, that can do anything they put their mind to, and can be anything they want to be, right? And so I think that that's part of my responsibility on that. But in addition to that, my second why, I will just tell you, and just add that in real quick, is that why am I doing what I'm doing?
Yes.
I'm doing what I'm doing because, I'll be honest, when I was in the corporate space, people a lot of times were just treated as numbers. And it drove me crazy. And I thought, this is not the way anyone should be working. We should all feel seen, heard, and understood. And if I can create an organization where we're helping people to have the kind of life they want, whether it be in sales or leadership or helping have that better culture in their company or as individuals at the company, if we can make a fundamental difference where people can love what they do, have anything they want in their life that they can accomplish, which sometimes people have limitations and they shouldn't be there, so we help them with that. But at the core of it, at everything we do, we want to make sure people feel seen, heard, and understood, and they're not just a number. And we want to make a big difference there.
Well, thank you so much today, Melissa, for sharing your passion with us. And your why really does come through, I think, in everything that you do, which we love seeing. So in closing, Money Sense airs on Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m. and on Sundays from 12 to 1 p.m. If you enjoyed today's show and you want to learn more about EIG and our upcoming events, please visit ellenbecker.com or call us at 262-691-3200. As always, I hope that we've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen.